Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Society Talks with Joe Lorenzo. I'm here with a lovely and talented talent manager, Terry Snell. Hi, Terry.
Hey, babes. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. So I want to start out. I know, obviously, you know, we've known each other for a while. I know some of your history. But where did you start in the entertainment industry? I know for sure that you started as an actor, but let's start there.
Well, I was born and raised in Chicago.
Okay, awesome.
And always wanted to do this, and that's where I started out, in Chicago.
And that's a lot of theater over there, right?
Chicago is second to Broadway.
Yeah.
In terms of its prowess. Used to be it was New York, Boston, Chicago.
Okay.
Now it's New York, Chicago, Boston.
Okay.
They open a lot of shows in Chicago now just to test them out before they take them.
Workshop them and then go somewhere else.
Yep.
Okay. So you started there as an actor.
Yep.
All right. And then what brought you to LA or what brought you to Hollywood?
Well, I had been asked to join the Steppenwolf Theater Company.
Okay.
And
prestigious.
Fortunately, at the time, I was in a marriage that was not supportive. So I wasn't able to do it. So it was like a crushing blow kind of thing. But a couple of the Chicago agencies took me on. Mm-hmm. In that city, you can freelance. You don't have to be exclusive.
Non-exclusive, like New York.
Right. Okay. Right. And each of the agencies I was with saw me in a little different light. And the one that saw me in a particular light submitted me on this wonderful opportunity. And I got my first speaking role on Home Alone.
Okay. The film, Home Alone with Macaulay Culkin. And
yes.
Yeah. All right. Who are you?
I play Aunt Leslie.
Okay.
And between Home Alone 1 and Home Alone 2, managed to get a divorce, got the kids graduated from school, moved to L.A.
Okay.
So we did Home Alone 2 while I was out in L.A. I came out here in 91 and I've been here ever since.
And where did those shoot Home Alone, both the Home Alones?
Well, God and his sense of humor. I move out to California to get away from the cold and snow. I get put back on Home Alone 2 in February
in
Chicago.
Oh.
New York and Chicago, okay. But the first part was in Chicago and the whole thing was shut down because one of those wonderful blizzards that white out everything. So we were down for like 3 days.
And those of you have never been in the dead of winter in Chicago, it is frigging freezing.
Avoid it if you can.
Ugh.
It's a lovely, wonderful city, but
yeah.
Winter is not so kind.
It's really bad. And I grew up in New York, New Jersey, and it does not even compare to like with the wind chill and everything in Chicago.
Well, it was hysterical because we filmed part of Home Alone 2 in New York City in the January, February.
Because that was the backdrop of Home Alone 2.
Right. It was Plaza Hotel.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I met that orange person there because he had a walk on.
I remember that he walked through the lobby of the hotel.
Yes.
And he had, and we won't even name his name, but
no,
I'm sure you guys
he
can,
who should not be named.
Yeah, exactly. He walked through the hot lobby of the hotel and had a line or something with Macaulay Culkin, right?
Yep. And I was like, what are you guys, you're pansies. This is not cold. You don't even need a fur coat. I can go with my heavy sweater.
That's funny because you were used to it from Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
Why did they split the time between Chicago and New York?
Location and availability. John Hughes, God bless his soul and rest him.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Magnificent man. A little quirky, but magnificent. He's from the Chicago area also.
Okay.
And he was very keen on shooting as much as he could in Chicago and hiring as many Chicago actors as he could on roles. He was just very supportive of the local talent there. And he had a lease on New Trier High School, which had been closed down at the time, which is where when they did Home Alone 1 and the wet bandits and the flooding of everything, they did that in the empty swimming pool of the high school.
Okay.
You know? So he had that to utilize. So and New York, unfortunately, is very expensive in which to shoot.
Yeah.
So they did as little as possible in New York and then assimilated everything else in Chicago.
And there's a scene in 2, is it 1 or 2, where they're all, like, they're in a choir and the bad brother is, like,
that's
making
two.
Fun. Okay.
That's 2.
Was that in that theater? I mean, in that high school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and so John Hughes, everybody should know from, I mean, the iconic movies.
Oh, Pretty
in
Pink,
Pink,
16 Candles.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, forever.
Yeah. Uncle Buck was
Ferris
my favorite.
Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, those are great ones. So you move out to L.A. in 91, you said?
Yep.
Okay.
January.
And then what was the, you were acting then, and then how did you make the switch to talent manager? Because I know you did both for a while, too. And still, I mean, you'll still act, no?
Or? Well, in the beginning, I'm an only child, and my father had passed away, and I'd promised him my mother would never go into a nursing home. So I was trying to continue to act and take care of her, and it was becoming harder and harder to be out of town or on, you know, the 18-hour, 20-hour shoots.
Right.
And she had fallen, literally, I have fallen, I can't get up. She lay on the floor like 12 hours because I was on set and I couldn't get through to her. So that was the decision to, okay, you can't do this anymore, at least until she's no longer here.
Right.
And my manager at the time wanted to open a youth division. And she knew that I had owned and operated a school of performing arts back in the Chicago area and asked if I'd open a minors department, which I did. Mm-hmm. And I found Jerry Farrar in New York.
Oh, yeah.
Turtle
from Entourage. Yeah.
And brought him out to L.A. He stayed with me until he could get a job and an apartment and car, and I took him to his auditions and whatnot. And we had a lovely relationship there, but he was 18 to play younger. And my thought was, since I had scouted him and put him up, as it were, that I should have the commission when he started booking.
Okay.
Well, he started booking and booking well, and the manager that I was working with would not split the commission with me because she said he was over 18. And I said, no, wait a minute here.
Oh, and he wasn't in the minor division.
He wasn't in. He was in the minor division, but he was over 18, so
right.
He qualified as an
technicality,
adult. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it for myself. So I was going back and forth on that, and then 9/11 happened. And I had a number of people who did not come out of the buildings that I knew well. And it just was like a life-changing thing for so many people.
Right.
And I went, you know what? The universe is saying, if you're going to do this, do it on your own.
And do it full force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what I did. And Mom lived another 3 years. By the time she passed, I so enjoyed what I was doing that I really haven't gone back to acting. Every once in a while, I get a call and I'll say, will you come in and do this?
Right.
Sure, I'll do that.
Yeah.
It's great fun. But I like helping actors get their start because nobody was there to help me and I had to do it on my own.
Okay. That's amazing. So talk a little bit about that. That's what managers do. It is a very much, I hate to use the term handholding, but it is a little bit of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
An age, when I talk to people in meetings or conventions or whatnot, I'm asked to speak. The analogy I make for them to understand is that the agencies are more like your parents. They go to work, they provide your food, your clothing, your housing. They haven't got time really to guide you and direct you because they're too busy working for you.
Right.
The managers work for you also, but they're more like the grandparents.
Okay.
They're there to be more patient. They're there to explain things in detail to you. They're there to help guide you in your photo shoots and your branding and how you're going to go about doing things like that, which an agency does not have time for. And that's okay because their agency is doing what an agency should do.
Yeah. So they're out there, the agency's out there getting the auditions and you know, negotiating the deals and making sure that the client is protected, in addition to the manager doing that. Because the lines have blurred nowadays, you know, between agent and manager. And I mean, they used to be very clear back in the day, but they've definitely blurred. I mean, you can get them auditions. You can, you know, I mean, you really.
Well, it's interesting because the state of California has its own set of laws and rules that govern agents and try to govern managers. The other states don't have as strict.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I really and truly do not know.
Yeah.
But I know that in the state of California, managers are not supposed to legally submit. Many do.
Okay.
Many agencies have closed. So beginning and developmental actors can't get agency representation.
Right.
But they can get managers who were willing to take a shot
to build
them
up and then get them the agent.
The managers have to help them get in the doors for casting offices.
Right.
So I think the state of California needs to kind of take a look at revamping some things. But
yeah.
In New York City, we don't have that problem. In Chicago, we don't have that problem.
And you have offices in all three, LA,
yes.
New York, and Chicago.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you have people there running it. And but do you kind of go into Chicago, into New York? And I mean, I know you're the owner, but do you have a hand in a lot of the things that are going on in those markets? Or do you let your people there kind of fly? And
it's a combination of both. Arthur Massey and Jacob Schott run the New York office.
I've spoken to Arthur, yeah.
Yeah, nice and
guy.
Then John Mills runs the Chicago office, and we are in daily contact via email and phone calls and all that sort of thing. But they run their offices as long as it's under the ethics and the morals and the rules of which I
and
want
the brand
the company
of Talent
run.
Inc.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And we're very fortunate right now in New York. We have a lead person in Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations.
Yeah.
Had 20 Emmy nominations this
Fantastic.
Year.
Fantastic.
He's playing Melvin Blue Franklin, yes, one of the five Temptations. And then we have somebody in Hamilton, and we have somebody touring in Lion King. And we just had one of our actors go to San Francisco in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got two people right now that are down to the very end on replacement principles on Kinky Boots and a couple of other things. So the New York office, Broadway-wise, is doing really well as with TV and film.
Great.
Chicago is coming along. It's a smaller city. There's much less local work there, but because of Wolf Productions going in with Chicago Med, Chicago PD,
right.
Chicago Fire, and then Empire.
He owns like Wednesday Nights or
the
something.
Chai. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He owns part of the
Dick
world.
Dick Wolf we're talking about, who created all the Law and
the
Orders.
SUV.
And everything.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which SUV is, I think it's in their 22nd or 23rd season
yes.
or something.
Yes.
It is
SVU.
SVU. Sorry. Not SUV. Not a Ford Explorer.
That's what I just drew on.
Yeah. But and that's my favorite show, and they've been around forever. And I mean, it still comes on in like TNT, and I'll still watch a marathon on a Saturday or Sunday.
Absolutely.
It's such a good show. But now, when you first started, were there tax credits and things of that nature? Because that's a big thing now in other states besides California, and that's why productions are going to those states, like Atlanta, like Georgia and Atlanta and Chicago. Like, is that a big factor in like where you open an office or where you do work? Or does it matter? I mean, does New York and LA, they don't have tax credits, do they?
LA has fallen short of competing in the tax credit area for quite some time, which is why there's been runaway production to other states. Texas was doing a lot of things, but they've just pulled their tax credits, so that's changing what's going on.
Michigan,
there.
Too. They don't have it anymore, I don't think.
Oddly enough, New Mexico, Albuquerque, there are three studios that are building spaces right now.
Wow.
And there's more. We're seeing more casting coming for Albuquerque.
Well, they did Breaking Bad there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, so my very good friend Adriana Porcaro, she was manager of casting at Sony, and one time we were doing a workshop or something together, and she had said to me, she's like, we have 13 shows on the air and all but one shoot out of the state.
Mm-hmm.
One, and it was the Jada Pinkett Smith medical show at the time, and only because to get her, she said, I have to be in LA because of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, everything else was going out of the state because of the tax credits.
Yep.
How does that harm or help, or what is sort of...
It helps the local actor in the smaller state areas where production has gone to work, because the walk-ons, the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 line roles, they're going to cast.
They're going to get them there, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Conversely, oddly enough, with shows like Hawaii 5-0, they fly almost everybody to Hawaii to do the show. So
Why do we think that is?
I don't honestly know, other than the roles that they write are pretty demanding.
Meaty. I've seen them, yeah.
And there may not be enough sophisticated talent locally in Hawaii to take on the very large co-star roles and the guest star roles.
Right.
We've had several of our clients work Hawaii 5-0. But again, that's been mostly out of the LA market because of the cost of tickets coming from New York to Hawaii.
It's much easier to go,
More time and more expense than it is coming from LA.
Yeah, because it's only 5 hours from LA and it's like 13 or something crazy from the East Coast. Yeah. So when you are looking, do you limit yourself, like when you're looking for things in the breakdowns or whatever it is in the grids and stuff, do you limit to say, okay, well, this person's only in Los Angeles or this person's in New York or this person? Like, do you know where your clients are, and do you know, or if they're like, let's go into the local hire thing. Like, let's say you have an actor in Los Angeles, but you know that they're born and raised in Albuquerque or New Mexico. Do you then submit them for that thing and say they can be a local hire, or how does that work?
All three of the offices, we sit down with our clients and say, you have said you want to work in these other cities.
Mm-hmm.
Are you financially willing to be considered a local hire? Can you cover your own transportation and your own lodgings and your own per diems?
Because that's what it means to be a local hire.
To be a local hire.
No, yeah, you have to pay your own way. Yeah.
If you're living in Texas or you're living in New York or you're living in Chicago and it's shooting in Los Angeles and they say must be an LA local hire, then when we submit or the agent submits, we say these people are capable of being of a local hire. We'd be happy to send an audition tape in for the first audition. If you need to see them for callbacks, they are able to come out for an in-person callback.
Okay.
But if the client is not able financially to do that, no bad marks against them by right. any means. We just won't submit them okay. under those circumstances. The one exception we had that was really quite positive is we had a young man as an LA client who was perfect for a particular role on Orange is the New Black.
Mm, I love that show.
So we took a chance and submitted him. And I tell my people, if you think you want to do this, you get yourself a credit card.
Mm.
With a $5,000 limit on it, and you lock it up in your safe, and you do not use it.
Only for stuff
this
like this.
This is only for this kind of thing.
Smart.
And if they don't happen to be a union member at the moment, that's there for your
your initial dues.
Your initial.
Yeah, because they're not cheap.
No. So we advise them to do that. They do it or they don't do it. It's up to them.
Right.
But it's there. So anyway, we had pitched this young man and sent a tape. They loved him. They wanted to book him, but he had to be a New York local hire. So I have some connections, and I pulled a few strings, and I got him a buddy pass for the airlines, which if anybody knows about the airlines, it's a like less expensive ticket.
And if you know like a flight attendant or a pilot or something like that, they can get you like, right?
Right.
Okay.
And then our New York people housed him, let him stay at their apartment so that he could do the role.
Okay.
He did the role, came back to L.A., all on his own dime for the most part. They loved him so much that they wrote him into another episode.
Oh, great.
And then at that time, that episode was shooting on his birthday.
Mm.
So I said, look, you know, this is his birthday. Clearly, you are going to be writing him into this. How can we start splitting the expense?
Okay.
So at that point in time, they covered his airfare, and he covered his own. He went to a hostel, and he had a place to, yeah.
Okay.
But you're not there. You're on set anyway.
Right. So. Yeah, that's true.
And so he stayed there. By the fourth episode, they started covering everything.
Nice.
Ground transportation from his apartment in Los Angeles to LAX, and then from Kennedy, JFK, to the hotel, and then
ground
to set,
transpo.
And then back.
So well worth it, for sure.
And we got him well over scale at that point in time, and he had like 5 or 6 episodes in that season. So it can be done.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to. It's like the Rubik's Cube.
But the actor has to be willing.
Yeah.
That's the point, is the actor has to be willing.
Flexible, willing, and drop your at the drop of a hat, you go and you do it.
Have you ever had a situation where you say, okay, they can be a local hire, you're doing your beginning stages, submitting them, and then you're doing the self-tape, and you say they can be a local hire, and then the actor turns around and says, I can't afford to do this?
No.
Okay.
I have not had that problem. One of the problems.
Would you just murder that actor if you did?
Y'all.
Yeah.
Y'all. Yeah. We would have a barbecue.
I guess. With an apple in his mouth or her mouth, yeah.
We did have an issue a few years back, and unfortunately it dampened our relationship with the casting office for about 6 months. We had a young man who was SAG, but it was before the two unions merged.
SAG and AFTRA, yeah.
SAG and AFTRA, and he was SAG, and he purported himself as AFTRA.
Okay.
Thanksgiving week. Which means it's a short
week. Oh, yeah.
Everybody closes down about noon on Wednesday.
This
and they
town
come
is
back
a ghost
Monday.
Town, guys, around the holidays. Yeah.
So they booked him. And then casting called back and said he's Station 12.
Which Station 12, guys, means that. So when I'm casting, my job as a casting director is we send in a form that's a Station 12, and we put the actor's name, first and last names, usually their social security number on it, and then we send it into SAG, and then they send us back a form that says this person's fine, they're clear, they're paid up, or they're delinquent, or they owe dues, or they're a must join, or there's things that have to be cleared before they can work. Okay.
Exactly. And in his case, he was a must join, and this was an AFTRA show, and it was shooting AFTRA. And I said to him, I called him, I said, you're Station 12. He said, well, I have to join AFTRA. I'm full SAG. And I said, well, you have to join AFTRA. They've just booked you, and you have to join.
Right.
He did not have the funds.
Mm.
And I had to call casting and tell them we've tried every which way from Howdy to get him a loan, to get this covered or whatnot, and we cannot get this covered for him. So you're going to have to go with your second choice.
Recast. Oof.
That, and they have to, casting then has to go back to the producers and tell the producers they can't have whom they really wanted.
Right, right.
And explain the whole
That's
thing.
That's not a fun talk for a casting director.
No, not because the producer, well, why didn't you know that? Why didn't you vet them better? It makes a mess for everybody. Yep. Long story short, that person was immediately no longer our client because they lied to us.
Okay.
You don't lie to us.
Do not lie to your agents and managers.
Not
be transparent.
Poke the bear. Don't poke the bear. So that has only happened once in the 18 years we've been in business.
Yeah. What about the like, because I know that SAG will do this. They'll work out something to say the check that you're getting from that job can go directly to their dues. They'll clear you. Was that not the case with AFTRA at the time?
Apparently, this individual actor was not in good standing for some things that we were unaware of.
Something else, yeah. Yes. There was something else going on there.
There were some negatives in the history of this person that we were unaware.
Okay.
So we couldn't have prepared for a fire because we didn't know a fire was coming.
Okay. And now they are negatively aware of something by themselves in a corner somewhere. Yeah. Not on your roster. Yeah.
Wish you well. Can't work with you anymore. Yeah. You lied to me. Sorry. Bye.
Well, so let's talk about that. What does bring an agent and a manager to release a client or to, besides the, something like that really being, you know, a headache for everybody, but just in general, like, you know, what would be reasons for you to sort of drop some clients from your roster, et cetera?
Social media is a dangerous tool.
Okay.
And anything you post, write, put out as a picture is there forever.
Mm.
And studios keep an eye on things. And we released one of our clients under contract with us because he posted an absolutely gorgeous art form naked picture of himself.
Uh-oh.
Now, granted, he was...
Oh, God, was he going in for like a Nickelodeon show or something?
Well, Disney and Nickelodeon would never see him again for the dad. He was the right dad age and the right dad look and whatnot. And it's just, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Even if you take it down, it's still there. Yeah. It has been seen. We can't do this, but it's a beautiful picture. I said, yes, it is a beautiful picture for a private situation, but not for this industry. Mm-hmm. You just have to be so very careful on what you do. And we pride ourselves on being a very, if you will, clean company. We don't...
Wholesome.
We just don't submit on certain things. We don't cultivate certain types of character roles.
Okay.
And this was just off the path of what our company stands for. So it just, we had to part ways.
So that's a big thing. Make sure that what you're putting out there is on brand. Like, that's also something that I think the agent and manager, together as a team, you should say, look, like, if you are, I don't know, 18 to play younger and you're this wholesome kid, you're going to be submitted to Disney and Nickelodeon. So clean your shit up. Sorry, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, be
careful
of that.
Don't put it out there in the first place.
I remember a story when I managed and I had Tyler Blackburn, and he was testing for a pilot, and he tested for it, and it was Matt Skrbalek at Paramount, and the CBS pilot, and Matt Skrbalek said, does he have a reel? Well, at the time, he had a reel, but it was really crappy, but it was out there, and the agent at Buchwald actually caught it and said, it's up, you've got to take it down. But before we could take it down, they had seen it.
Yeah,
it was They just felt like, no, he wasn't strong enough, because at the time, it had only had like maybe a one or two independents and like an Unfabulous episode from Nickelodeon or something. So they just felt like, no, he's not strong enough to carry this fourth lead in this pilot kind of thing. And so it can work against you, what
Absolutely.
You have out there.
Yeah. Well, look what just happened on Saturday Night Live 2 weeks
ago. Oh, and that guy, what did he say? Racist something or something about Asians?
Years back, he 2 or 3, 4, 5 years back, he made some comments on his social media about minorities that were, the statements were less than flattering or kind.
Yeah.
And as young people, we do some really dumb, stupid things.
Of course.
And we say some dumb, stupid things. Mm-hmm. And he had done some dumb, stupid things.
Yeah.
But it's Saturday Night Live. That's the spearhead of almost all political commentary at this point in time. And with all of the movements that have come up, the Me Too and
Black Lives Matter,
just all of the stuff that's going on, you just can't.
Yeah,
you can't keep someone on your staff or in your cast who's done these things, even though they can do a mea culpa till the cows come home.
Right,
it's not changing that it's out there.
Yeah. Well, I have, so I'm on the fence of about that a little bit. I did this person to me that I remember reading that and I was like, well, I mean, he was sort of, it didn't matter one way or the other to me, but I do have a, I have an issue with what we call, what I call cancel culture, which means like everything that's sort of going on, and I can bring up Al Franken, right? That, yes, it needed
such
to be
shame.
It needed to be dealt with because it's part of the Me Too movement, but he automatically had to resign. He automatically, like, for me, and then there was no investigation. So a lot of the times, and we can bring it back to this world where if something is out there and you don't necessarily agree with it, then investigate it first and see, get to the root of it without canceling it right away, if that makes sense. I don't know. I mean, do you agree or... You don't have to agree with me, but I mean...
My personal feeling is pendulums swing from side to side. And right now, my opinion, the pendulum has gone a little too far in one direction.
Uh-huh.
Mistakes are made honestly, and mistakes are made on purpose.
Right.
And finding out which that was, to me, is the first routine. I'm old enough to have come from a time frame when there was a lot of sexual harassment mm-hmm. for women in the workforce, regardless of what profession it was in. Mm-hmm. And you were expected to behave and dress and do in a certain way. Mm. And it was very confining. And it was very demoralizing in many ways. So it's nice to see that we've moved away from that to
absolutely.
An extent. But you get over too far.
Right.
Gee, Biden gave me a hug. Oh my God, that was sexual harassment. Ah, come on.
Right. No, people are really actually, and I support the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement and the and all of that. I really do. But
absolutely.
People are I agree with you. They are taking some things to an extreme. I mean, there was an article that I had read in the New York Times about someone when they first start a job, they don't even know how do they shake hands anymore
exactly.
at this point. It's like, you know, is there any contact whatsoever, you know? So have you seen that trend for your clients in the entertainment industry, like having to say to them, look, be careful on set, be careful what you say, be careful what you do, be careful what you or what you put out there in the world, be careful. You know, it's a very sort of scrutinized time.
It has also changed how I do coaching and how I teach.
Okay.
Oftentimes I come in and I'll address a large group of people and they'll come up and perhaps we'll choose some people that'll do their audition piece or something of that nature. And we try to redirect them. And sometimes on the redirect, they just aren't getting it. Their body muscle memory isn't getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to say, before I do anything, I say, may I touch you?
Yeah.
Because I want to move you to the position you need to see that you're not getting.
Right.
And to... In the past, I didn't even have to think about doing
right.
anything. It wasn't offensive. It was never meant to be offensive. But now
right.
I have to stop and say, may I have your permission to do this? And I'm doing it in front of all these other people.
Right.
So they know it's all being handled that way. But it has just changed so many things. But there have also been acting coaches and CEOs who have use their power
oh,
and
yeah.
their structure to do terrible things to
yep.
people. So,
and those people deserve to be behind bars.
Absolutely.
And those people deserve what comes to them for sure. Yeah.
When I first moved here to LA, there was a particular agent who finally was, he finally went to jail. But he would insist that the female people coming in looking for representation remove their blouse.
What?
Mm-hmm. And his quote statement on, well, I have to see if you have any piercings or tattoos.
Oh gosh.
You know, and because they're young,
they'll
women
fall for it,
hoping
yes.
that they're going to be picked up and have an agent and
yep.
get a start on things, they would do it. And they would feel horrible, mm-hmm. obviously, later. And finally enough, it happened enough times that women start to speak to one another.
Yeah.
And then they turned it into SAG, and SAG went after him, pulled his franchise, and then legal steps went after that, and he did go to jail, as yeah. rightly he should.
Right. Well, so as far as kids are concerned on set, is it a rule in SAG, or is it an ethics code that parents have to be within earshot and eyeshot of their child at all times?
That is a rule in SAG.
It is a rule.
It is a rule.
Okay. I think it's a great rule. You know, I think it's a great rule that you are aware of what your child's doing, but that does not mean that you can step in either. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, I certainly
let's
do.
Let's be very clear on that, you know? I mean, now with Society Performers Academy, all the things that I'm doing with the kids and teachings and you know, workshops and stuff, we have it in paperwork that we make them sign that says, you will be in the back of the room. You know, you can be visible and within earshot, et cetera, but you'll be in the back room and let us do our job.
It's very painful. It happens, unfortunately, more with mothers of daughters than it does with mothers of sons, in my experience.
Okay.
Will have issues where they're in the hair and makeup.
Oh, wagon, and they try to tell them how to do it.
And they try to tell them, well, my daughter doesn't look good with that kind of hairstyle. Can we do this? Or, you know, no. You'll not be hired again.
Right.
Because that word gets out very quickly. It's a small community when it comes to that. And sometimes we have not experienced this firsthand, but we have some very dear friends who are managers who have, where the parent has actually interrupted the scene to redirect.
Oh my gosh.
Fired on the spot, gone.
Yeah. I had an issue years ago, and actually the daughter is she's becoming famous right now, but the son got hired to do like a third lead in this movie in New Mexico. 2 days in, the producers call us and say, you have got to talk to the mom. She's driving us nuts. She's too involved. It's too much. She wants a hand in every little thing, telling us what to wear, all this stuff. And I spoke to her and I said, look, you've got to pull it back. Let them do their job. That's the point. There's department heads on every single, department. They know what they're doing. Dial it back. She did not. And the kid was consequently on a plane back within a week. Fired. He didn't know what he did wrong. He was like 9.
He didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly.
It was the parent.
Yeah. Yep. Let's dive into that. How can a parent be helpful to their child just starting in this business, no matter what experiential level you're at, or harmful to their child? What have you seen? What are the tips that you can help them, and then staying away from what are the things that you can harm them in?
We recently dropped a young female client who had great potential. She was wonderful at improv, but the mother couldn't keep her hands off things.
Mm.
And we were working on a specific issue for her daughter, and the mother decided to take it into her own hands and to call production and to call the agent. The firestorm came my way, of course, because they were our client.
Right.
And I couldn't, because the writing was on the wall that mm-hmm. this was the way it was going to be every time. And I'm sorry, life's too short. I don't need that headache.
Right.
The child suffers.
Yep.
It's just the way it is. We in our company try to educate our parents to the point of, you are the support person.
Mm-hmm.
You are also the bank. You have to make sure that they have the tools they need, the right photographs, that they're in class, that they're getting coached for major auditions, mm-hmm. that you have the ability to do the self-tape and send it in, or the ability to go to a self-tape place mm-hmm. and get it done and sent in. You have to be on top of things, responding to us as soon as we send mm-hmm. you a text message about an audition. You need to ask your questions and whatnot, and then you step away.
Right.
It goes into
well, that's why they hire an agent and manager. It always baffled me where, they always want an agent and manager, right? And then they think that, of course, yes, they know their child the best, of course, but you don't know better than the agent or manager. That is what you hire them for. That is what you hire. That's for their expertise and their 18 years that you said you've been doing this or whatever it is. It's that knowledge. The parents don't have that. Most of them don't know any of that.
I can give you a beautiful example of how an agent, a manager, a parent can work together for a win for a child.
Okay.
I happen to be very faith-based, and most of our clients are of the same religious belief.
Okay.
So they trust that their child is not going to be introduced into something really awful.
Or satanic or yeah. something?
Well, that, or sexual.
There's, oh, you know, yeah, yeah,
that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of thing. And we had a young male client who was, I think, 10 and a half at the time. Very malleable time in a child's life. And it was for a wonderful guest star role on Criminal Minds.
Mm.
Well, as you know, Criminal Minds is adult venue scripting all the time.
Yeah.
And
but they have a lot of kids on that show because they do a lot of flashback stuff.
But they do wonderful things with it. And I presented the role to the parents. I said, look, I know what your faith is. I know what this is all about. However, it's also an opportunity, if he were to book this, to open up great doors for him. My suggestion is this. let me talk to the agent, let the agent and I talk to the casting office and see how they plan on handling the scene. Because the scene was that the child was hiding in the closet because someone had broken into the house and that someone was raping and murdering his mother.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
what he was witnessing through the crack of the closet door.
Mm-hmm.
He never knew what it was he was witnessing. It was done on a closed set.
Mm-hmm.
He never saw the script, and the parents didn't let him see the episode till he became an adult.
Right. That's a great way to handle it.
And subsequently, he got a series regular on his next audition.
Wow.
Because that credit gave him such strength.
I remember this boy. Wait a second. Didn't you share him with Robin What's-Her-Face at AKA?
Yes.
It is that.
Yeah.
Wow, do I remember this story.
Yeah. And so
he got an ABC show after that.
Yep.
Look at me. Oh my gosh, I do remember this story. I'm like, as you're saying it, I'm like, this is familiar to me. Okay.
Yeah. So there are ways to approach it. And we just recently had one where the parents went, you know, we really don't feel that we want our child introduced to this subject matter at this time.
Right.
And in that particular case, there was no way of getting around what the subject matter
right.
was. So we'll honor that. And that's not a black mark against them in our eyes or in the casting office's
right.
eyes. I'm not casting office, the agent's eyes. But we now know to not in any way, shape, or form even submit this particular
yeah.
child on anything until we've gone in and taken a look at the sides
yeah.
and to see what's going on.
Okay.
And again, agents may not have the time to do that, but managers do.
Right.
So,
because you have less clients.
Yeah.
That's really the
exactly.
key. Yeah. I just had this actually, and it's a new film for Netflix that Taraji P. Henson's in, and it was 12 pages of sides, and we were asked to coach the kid. He's, you know, been in my workshops and things. And I saw the sides, and it was F this, F that, and I
yep.
know mom's church going and all that kind of stuff. And I called her and I said, look, you do not have to do this. You do not, you know, don't feel like as though, because they're just starting out, I said, don't feel as though if you say no based on material that anyone's going to be upset with you.
Right.
Because casting knows that if you're not comfortable with it, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to come out sideways anyway.
Exactly.
It's not, you're not really connected to it. If it's something that you really wouldn't do or wouldn't say or would, you know, you can pass on it.
And we've also had parents ask, do they have to say this?
Right.
And we can go back and ask, are the producers married to this script as is? Or
right.
is there any flexibility in the swear words?
Yeah.
And most of the time, they're not real flexible because that's what they want to create in
right.
their scene, and that's fine.
Well, and that's why there's Netflix now, because they can do anything they want, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what do you, when you first meet a kid and a parent, what is the, obviously you read the kid and you say, okay, great, they have something there. There's some sort of,
that
talent or whatever. Yes, and you don't know what it is until you see it. What is it that you look at as the parent, you know, in the parent's eyes as well to say, you're crazy, I don't want to work with you or whatever. Like, how are you vetting the clients that you do take on?
Some of the parents are really good at hiding
masking
things.
It until 6 months in. Yeah. Oh, I get it.
So you try to look for red flags. You try. If they truly can't follow basic directions.
The parent.
Yes.
Okay.
What are we going to do?
Right.
Because we have to rely on the parent who's the adult
right.
to follow the directions that are required for preparing for this audition or preparing for this work.
Yeah.
We see often parents have more of a desire for this to happen
oh, yeah.
than the child does.
Oh, yeah.
That's really apparent when you're interviewing or reading them or watching them, and we just don't go further with
it. Do
that.
You know what I ask when I'm doing? So I'll do seminars and then I'll audition the kids or whatever. You know, the very first thing that I ask the kid, and I don't allow the parents to speak, I say, are you being forced to be here? And do you know how many kids will rat their parents out? They'll be like, no, I don't want to do this. I don't even know what I'm doing here. You know, kids are honest.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes, they are, and which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So what, you know, when you do take a client on, what sort of the steps. Let's say you just saw a kid in a workshop or a class or whatever it is, and you just say, there's something there, that it thing or whatever.
I have, right now, I'm working through this with three young kids. Kids grow up. You have to replace
yeah.
that six-year-old all the time. And therefore, we go out and scout different places and look mm-hmm. for young people. I have one young man out of South Carolina right now. He's going to be 6 in February, which is the magic time, as you
yeah.
well know. And then I have two little girls out of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with all three families, getting them to come here for at least a 6-month period of time or relocate if they can. Mm-hmm. We don't like to see somebody relocate right away.
Right.
Because they don't know if it's going to be a go or not. They don't know if the child's really going to enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
Come out for that 6-month period of time during the proper casting season.
Could they do 3?
No, we don't do 3 months.
Okay.
Because we know how long it takes anymore to get somebody known
some
by
traction.
A casting office.
Yeah.
And at just about the time 3 months hits, they're
ready
comfortable,
to go. Yeah.
And then they leave. So we don't make any money unless somebody books work.
Right, you make a percentage of what they make. Yeah.
We don't do a monthly fee, and if anybody asks you for that, run away because they're not legitimate.
Yeah, as an agent or manager, you can pay up front for classes and things of that nature,
absolutely.
But an agent or manager that says, I'll represent you, give me this fee per month, that's actually illegal in the state of California. But like,
and a
said
lot
earlier,
of them have gotten around it by saying, well, this fee is to support the website, and we need to have you on our website,
yeah.
So it's all BS. But anyway, the one young man is coming in now for a 5-day period in October. Mm-hmm. We're setting up agent meetings.
Which is episodic season, guys, if you don't know.
And looking for housing because the mother has been able to transfer her job to California. So they are making, they're tired of where they live. They're tired of weather. They want out of it all together. So even if this doesn't work for them, for him to be successful in the acting business, she wants to be living out here.
Right. She's so like, hell, I'm there for the weather. Yeah.
So they're coming out to take agent meetings and to look for housing.
Okay.
And then they will be here the first of the year.
For like a couple of weeks, they'll come out, do those meetings.
Yes.
And then if they know that it's a sort of the meetings went well, then they'll come for the 6 months.
Right.
Okay.
And then these other two young girls out of Texas, again, very young, 5, 6, 7 year age range.
Yeah.
Neither of the parents are sure about relocating, which is fine. They're going to come out and test the waters for a 5-month period of time, 4 or 5 months. I can do 4 or 5 months. I won't do 3. It's just too short.
Got it.
And so we're working on getting them some tape that can be used to get them appointments with agents to get that set up. We're sending them information on areas in which to live that are perhaps safer and better for little kids.
Do you still suggest, it's not Oakwood anymore. What is it now? Ava? Avalon?
I never suggested
me
that.
Me neither, because
it's
a cesspool of crazy parents.
Yes.
Yes.
And everybody trying to one-up one another. And,
yes.
Well, my child got this audition. Why
didn't
you?
And they're just trying to throw them off their game.
Exactly.
So, but you have places that you know and areas that you say.
Right.
Yeah.
And if they're going to be in public school, then there are certain areas they should be in and certain areas they should not be in.
Well, where you are, Toluca Lake and Burbank is a great system.
It's
over
wonderful.
There. Yeah.
It's wonderful. Santa Monica has a great school system.
Yep.
Beverly Hills has a great
but
school system.
Beverly Hills
Glendale
and Santa Monica, they're a little bit
Burbank.
More expensive, though.
And Pasadena. But that Pasadena is way out there in terms of travel time.
Yeah.
But the whole LA Unified School District, it pales by comparison from the school systems they're coming from.
Okay.
So if you're going to homeschool, fine. If you're going to go to public school, go to certain cities. If you're going to go to private school and you have the funding to be able to do that easily, do that.
Right.
There are a couple of very fine performing arts, junior high and high schools that, mm-hmm. that you can put your child in. But you have to be, again, this is part of the parent job. You, parent, have to vest the school districts in the places your child is going to be studying. Because
right.
it's very important that you learn.
Yeah. Hello. Well, number one, it's also a law. They can't get an entertainment work permit if they have something D or below, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
it's not an average.
Yeah.
You have to have a C or better in every subject.
Right. But also think about it this way. If you're not getting good grades in school, why the hell should the parent even be allowing them to enter into doing acting or even another sport or whatever? It's like the thing of, you know, if you're on a team in school, they check your grades. And if you're failing, you get put off that team until your grades get better. It's the same thing in the acting world, in the entertainment world. You've got to maintain a certain average, like you're saying, right?
Yep. No, that's not an average.
I'm sorry.
It's not an
average. You just
average.
Can't have a D.
You can't have anything lower than a C,
C
in any subject area, including physical education.
Okay. Okay. So they're going to do this, let's say they're going to do this 6-month thing. What constitutes as success for that 6 months? Is it getting a lot of auditions. So they say, well, he or she's getting a lot of traction. Oh, they're getting callbacks. Oh, well, then there's definitely interest there. Does it have to be bookings? Can it be as good as they're getting those auditions and the feedback is really good? So you're like, look, they're doing fairly well. I think that you should really consider coming for a longer time. What do you gauge that on?
Well, there's two sides at this table. There's the agent manager side, and then there's the parent child side. For me, as a manager, taking a developmental client, someone who has no credits, no experience, and getting them started in the industry.
Also called green.
Yeah. I look at it from the standpoint of, was I able to place them with a good agency? Are we getting them auditions? From their auditions, are they getting callbacks? Mm-hmm. From their callbacks, are they getting avails? Even if they haven't booked, if they're getting callbacks and avails and they're getting out frequently, to me, that's a success in the beginning.
Yeah, okay? I agree.
From the parent standpoint, it may be, you know, we've done all this. We've done all these auditions. We've had these callbacks. We've had these avails and nothing's happened. And we just want to go home.
Okay.
And that's understandable. It's heartbreaking for us because we know from a bigger picture that this can pop. It can happen.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But that's their right to choose.
Right.
Because it's something I had always wanted to do and there was nobody there to support me, I'm very supportive of the parents who do support their children in doing this because they are giving a great opportunity and gift to their child. Just like if they were sending them to some form of really heavy-duty sports camp.
Right.
To learn how to be the best, you know, yeah, quarterback or pitcher or whatnot. Yep. It's the same investment in time and energy and hopes. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It took, his name always goes out of my head when I go to make this statement. It drives me crazy. Indiana Jones.
Harrison Ford.
Thank you. Harrison Ford was an actor here in Los Angeles for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Got nowhere to speak of, you know, a crumb here and there, job mm-hmm. here and there. And he got tired and fed up with it. And he went back up to the Pacific Northwest to go back and build houses, which was his fallback.
I heard that and he was a carpenter. Yeah.
Then, when he was there, Spielberg hired him for Star Wars. So you never know. I didn't start my career until I was a mature adult.
Right.
Because I didn't have the opportunity. They had all been blocked when I was younger.
Right.
But I was able to work and make a success out of it. Because the universe and God has its plan for you.
Yep.
And if it's something that's going to happen, it will happen.
Well, and there's different paths, you know. So let's say there's two girls, similar, you know. You can't compare, and this is for parents out there, you cannot compare your child's journey to the journey of another child.
Absolutely.
You cannot. What I love to use this term, I use it all the time in my speeches. I always say, you know, when you're in grade school and you're sitting there and you're looking over at your, you know, you're taking a test and you're looking over at your neighbor's paper or your neighbor's test and your teacher says to you, eyes on your own paper. That is a note to parents and even kids. When you're looking at other things around you or the competition in a casting office or whatever it may be, or you're in school and they're like, I'm getting this, I'm getting that, or you're in your classes and stuff, eyes on your own paper. Do not worry about what the other people are doing or getting or in what you're not getting. You know, just focus on you.
One of the things that drives me crazy with parents is has to do with this, because your child has a specific look,
mm-hmm.
a specific flavor. That's what your child is.
Right.
So when you tell me, well, my daughter's or my son's friends have been going out
right.
for this and this and this, the first thing I ask them, do they look exactly like you?
Right. Literally a carbon copy.
Yeah. You know? And generally it's no.
Yeah.
Generally they're a different ethnic base.
Right.
Sometimes they are bilingual or trilingual and your child is not. It depends upon what the roles are asking for to begin with.
Right.
And it depends upon credits that you have on your resume. And it depends upon, have you been in class?
Mm-hmm.
Are you studying the craft? Do you know how to handle an audition when you go in? One of the places we recommend our people study now, both adults and minors, and I won't mention the name of the place, but I'll tell you what they do. And it was started by a film director. It's a teaching school that was started by a film director, and he started it because he saw so many actors shooting themselves in the foot when they came in for an audition, not knowing how to handle the camera lens. And things as simple as, and he said, I watch this as a director, if people's eyes are darting back and forth and they're looking at the ceiling and they're going from side to side, I'm not going to be able to stop that on set. Mm-hmm. It's going to take me time with this person.
And time is money.
And time is money. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to choose someone who doesn't have that problem.
Right.
And he said, I've seen many really great actors that if they just got tweaked, they'd get the roles.
Yep.
That's why he started what he does. Every class is done on camera, on a set. They're given their sides as if they were going to set.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get to work with their scene partner. They show up to do it. It's taped. It's replayed. It's tedious for those who aren't doing their scene at the time because they have to sit there and watch what's going on.
Yeah, but sometimes there's a lot of knowledge in watching and what the notes that they're giving up on that, with that person up on stage.
Right.
Yeah,
and you can also see because there's some brilliant little things that an actor will do sometimes, like if they're in a serious scene and they're just rubbing the rim of their coffee cup as they're going into their monologue, and that's captivating.
Mm-hmm.
And you as an actor might have not have thought of, oh, what is my non-spoken communication that I'm giving? And you get to see, oh,
right.
Hey, I need to work on this kind of thing.
Meryl Streep did an interview on the Graham Norton Show, which I'm obsessed with. It's a big talk show in London, for those of you guys who don't know. But she said when she was doing Into the Woods that, oh my God, I want to say Andrew Lloyd Webber, but it's not. It's the Stephen Sondheim. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a song for her for the movie, and she's like, oh, I would love to hear it. So they went over, her and the director went over to this house, and he said, can I play it for you? She said, of course. And so, and he sang it for her, but he talks like this, and she turns around, she's like, so it wasn't anything I could steal. Meaning that's piggybacking on what you're saying, because sometimes if you look at a performance, not that you're looking at a performance so that you can steal it or plagiarize it in a sense, but you there are little nuggets of things that you can take
ignite
from other
imagination.
Actors.
Exactly.
Yes.
Ignite your imagination.
Yeah. So how important is it for your clients to continually train and be in class and keep flexing that muscle?
The analogy I like to give on that, a dancer or a singer never stops studying.
Right.
That dancer's at the ballet bar every day.
Right.
Keeping those muscles limber and increasing their power and their strength. The singer, same thing. Actors oftentimes think, well, I got my BA, I got my BFA,
right.
I know what I'm doing. I don't need to
take
class.
Or I can memorize lines quickly. Yeah. That's enough.
Yeah.
No.
And you can't be lazy like that.
Right.
Because there are 100 people behind you who want exactly what you're going in
Amen.
For today.
Yep.
Agents, not agents, casting offices get between 3,000 and 5,000 mm-hmm. picture submissions for
each role. Yeah.
And this particular episodic season, there have been so many roles and so many projects. Not saying they're all really high paying, but there's been a lot being put out there. So if you don't have a picture that grabs their eye, and this picture is only like
about an
inch by an inch,
yep.
And you don't have the chops to back it up when you go in, you're not going back in there again.
You're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kid or adult, doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And they're much more lenient, I would say, with kids. In my experience when I'm casting too is I don't care if they don't have a long resume as a kid. Of course, the kid with the long resume, you know, is going to go to the top of the heap. But you're willing to at least pre-read or try that kid or let them self-tape or something, because there's some sort of natural innate thing that comes out in a kid that, you know, you're willing to just see. And then with the adults, you're less forgiving. You're like, well, why don't you have anything on your
resume? At this point in time, if you're at this age, why have you not learned this?
Exactly. Yeah.
You're lazy. You haven't been studying.
Exactly.
Why should I bother with you?
And that's the thing that bothers me the most, is that I don't understand why parents and even adults or whatever, it's, first of all, if you want to be an actor, that's something that's so in you that you cannot dim that light. It is something that is burning and bright inside of you. So you want to go to class. You want to flex that muscle. You want to, immerse yourself in that world. So when I find out that they're not, or they're doing maybe 1 hour a week, or maybe, it baffles me. What are you doing with the rest of your time? You're sitting by the phone waiting for it to ring. Well, you're not doing anything to make it ring. You know, does that make sense? It's like agents and managers can only do so much. The other.
Absolutely. You don't, just because you have an agent and manager doesn't mean you sit back and say, wait for them to open doors for you.
Right.
You have to be proactive for yourself, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that totally makes sense. There was, and I can't remember, it was an agent that I did a workshop with at one time, and I cannot remember who it was, said, I make 10% of your money. I'm only going to do 10% of the work. You've got to do the other 90%. You know, it's all up to you. I can only get you in the room and you have to do the rest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any last, like, sort of words of wisdom, anything that, I don't know, maybe that somebody that you had encountered or along the way that had given you advice that you want to sort of bestow or put forward, or something that you find yourself telling actors, young actors and parents all the time?
Don't let anyone steal your power.
Mm.
And people will try.
Yeah.
Some of them will try on purpose. Someone will do it inadvertently. If this is your calling, as you just mentioned, if it's in your spirit, if this mm-hmm. is what draws you, this is what God created you to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you may not be ever doing it for a full-ass big studio production ever.
Right.
But you may be doing it in a small community theater that strikes the hearts of the people who are watching you.
Mm-hmm.
The whole creative world of music and of dance and of plays and musicals reach all cultures,
mm-hmm.
reach all feelings, all emotions, and it has a purpose to help humanity grow and be better.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your calling, then do it to the best of your ability, 100%. Not looking at it for a paycheck,
right?
But for the reward in humanity,
right?
That's where I'm at.
And I'll can piggyback on that is that David Schwimmer didn't necessarily want to do Friends. He didn't necessarily want to do television. He was in Chicago, I believe, doing theater. Had a theater company with someone. I don't know what it was. And wasn't really interested in it. You know, was really happy doing his local regional theater or whatever it was. I mean, this is what I've heard. I read, and that was okay. That was what fueled him. And then lo and behold, obviously this huge opportunity comes along. What I think happens a lot of times is everyone goes for that brass ring right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up fizzling out because their expectations are way too high, way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's think about it this way is you don't graduate college and all of a sudden become the CEO. You have to start somewhere and gradually get there, you know, unless your family owns the company or whatever.
Nepotism to the forest.
Yeah. But even then, if you notice, it's not as prevalent as it used to be. I mean, it's not as like, oh, this person got this job or whatever. Like I look at Meryl Streep's kids or Scott Eastwood or something and I say, yeah, maybe you got in the door to some of these bigger things, but it's not going to keep you there if you don't know what the hell you're doing. You know, so you've got to work for it. You've got to stay determined and work for it.
And also just give back.
Right.
You know, there are people who can't see who would love to hear a book read to them.
Right.
There are people in rehab centers that are lonely and just a visit from someone, just a face coming and say, hey,
right.
Hope you're going to be doing better tomorrow. And just chat today. Give of yourself, not expecting anything in return, is a great gift to life.
I think that's great. And I think we can end there. Thank you so much, Terry, for coming and talking with
me. My pleasure. Great seeing
Terry
you again.
Snell with Talent Inc. in LA, Chicago, and New York. Fabulous woman all around. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. And you can follow me at Joe_Lorenzo on Twitter and Instagram.